Chapter 5, June 1817. It was only with momentary alarm that Segundus found Childermas at the breakfast table, sitting quite comfortably with a cup of tea and a letter. Noticing his arrival, Childermas looked up and quirked an eyebrow at him, giving a slow, amused nod. Segundus's surprise had, it seemed, been noted. A number of questions flitted through Segundus's mind in the following moments, mostly whys and hows and whens, along with a, "We weren't expecting you for another fortnight," which, although not technically a question, summarized the rest of the possibilities quite neatly. As Segundus scrabbled around for a way in which to phrase any of these questions without sounding accusatory and unwelcoming, Childermas took pity on him. "I arrived in the small hours," he explained, and now that Segundus looked at him, he saw the shadows beneath his eyes darker than usual. He could only have slept a few hours. "I did not wish to disturb anyone."
"You must have crept in quiet as a mouse," Segundus replied, shaking himself out of the shock enough to sit down and put his breakfast together. "It is quite a relief you are not a villain, after all."
Childermas said nothing to that, just huffed a quiet breath of laughter and looked at Segundus with a self-satisfied expression, as if he were pleased to have been found out. "You found your correspondence?" Segundus asked as a diversion, nodding to the pile of letters stacked by Childermas's elbow.
"I did." He was quiet a moment.
"The desk is very useful, thank you."
"Oh," said Segundus. It had been delivered and placed in Childermas's room weeks ago, and Segundus had become so used to seeing it there when sorting the letters that arrived at Staircross for Childermas that he had forgotten its relative novelty.
"I am glad. Mr. Honeyfoot spotted it in a shop in York and thought it would be an excellent fit for your room."
Segundus smiled a little.
It had made his task of sorting Childermas's letters much easier than trying to balance them on the chair or the bedside table, and he said as much. Childermas gave him a curious smile, and, in unspoken accord, turned back to his letter as Segundus started on his breakfast. Segundus watched as Childermas read, one hand holding the letter, the other his cup. It seemed such a natural sight that Segundus was taken aback by it. For a moment, he pondered how he would have received this news, had he the ability to speak to himself of a year ago. John Childermas, sitting at his ease in the morning room, and John Segundus, pleased to see him there. He would have surely laughed in his own face, or asked himself if he was feeling quite all right.
"I have a visit to pay today," Childermas said, putting the letter down and picking up a crumpet as he spoke. He looked up at Segundus with a question in his dark eyes.
"I would like you to accompany me if you have no other business."
He took a bite of the crumpet, keeping his eyes on Segundus all the while.
"There's nothing pressing," answered Segundus after a moment, and it was not precisely a lie. Although there were a number of things that needed his attention, orders and repairs and plans, he was sure they could wait an afternoon.
"And it is a fine day. I would be glad for the diversion."
"Good," said Childermas, and poured himself some more tea.
The day was looking bright and warm, and if he was honest with himself, Segundus did not relish the thought of a day riding to goodness knows where on a mysterious visit, but Childermas's manner had been so open that he could not refuse. He was all too aware of the business that Childermas had given up on his account weeks before, and knew that to accept such a request as this was really the very least he could do to make up for it. That situation had not been mentioned again, which Segundus was glad for. Still, he felt some guilt over the missed trip to Sheffield, although they had spent some productive days studying the letters. He was happy now to go some way towards repaying a kindness. Childermas did not provide any further details about the visit, and Segundus did not ask. They readied the horses soon after breakfast, Mrs. White having provided them with a parcel of food for their lunch, some meat pies, some apples, a whole fruit cake. They set out west, crossing the moor at first, but soon dipping to the lowland. As they rode, they talked, and, as might be expected, the talk was mainly of magic. Childermas had recently returned from showing off Finculus to various societies of magicians, and had mentioned in a letter a very individual phrase on Finculus's left ankle that had been pointed out by a lady magician in Hereford. They had not yet been able to discuss the various arguments this had provoked, and their letters, although thought-provoking and frequent, were not quite the same as discussing the matter face-to-face. Segundus was glad now for the opportunity, and although he felt a small itch of guilt for abandoning his preparations for a day, he was happy to be out in the open air and to be having such an interesting conversation, even if it did have the drawback of happening on horseback. On such a fine day, there were a number of other people on the road, many good mornings to be said and traveling salesmen to be gently refused. Segundus was comforted on this front at the knowledge that they would call at Staircross within the week, and he would purchase what he needed then, so he was little troubled by refusing them. Although one man did manage to coax him to pause with the offer of a great quantity of scarlet ribbon for a very good price, but Segundus stopped himself and gave the trader directions to Staircross and told him to call when he happened to be passing, as there would be sure to purchase. During this exchange, Childermas had not stopped, but had continued on at Brewer's leisurely pace. It was a matter of moments to catch him up, but Segundus found himself in no hurry to do so. He let himself hang back, taking a moment to consider man and horse. They were neither of them handsome beasts, but both were practical and unfanciful, which were both qualities Segundus rather admired, leaning somewhat to the fanciful himself. They had similar dispositions, he supposed, a preference for straight talking over dancing around a subject, an instinct for men's characters that seldom proved false. Brewer's judgments, Childermas had told him some weeks ago, as the horse had been busily snuffing at Segundus's pockets in search of an apple, had never yet let him down. Childermas had an odd way of riding, so relaxed as to be almost sliding off his mount's back, but still seeming perfectly balanced. It looked, to Segundus, much like the habit he had of propping himself against the nearest wall or piece of furniture. It was not a tidy habit, but Segundus, to his own surprise, more and more found the carelessness of it charming. He had known several young men in his youth who had taken up the habit in an effort to appear insouciant, but had always had around them an air of affectation. None of them had worn it so well or so naturally as Childermas. The man in question turned in his saddle to fix an amused look on Segundus, as if he had felt a stare. Segundus felt the color rising to his cheeks and nudged his mount to catch up so he might continue their conversation. After 2 or 3 hours of gentle, easy riding, Childermas took them from the main road down a narrow lane overarched with trees, their leaves seeming to glow in the sunshine to illuminate the path below with an intense verdancy. When they left the shade of the trees, the sun was bright and warm, and Segundus spotted a small house some ways ahead. The house was little more than a 2-room cottage at the foot of the moors, close to the Church of St. Lawrence. Segundus could hear the wind in the trees behind them, and just below it the tolling of the church bells sounding midday. He followed Childermas, the hooves of their horses clopping unhurried against the path. As they approached the house, a woman appeared from behind a wall. Segundus noticed her posture stiffen instinctively at the sight of 2 men on horseback, but after a moment she relaxed and hurried forward to meet them. "John!" she called, laughing, as she came toward them. Childermas fairly leapt from Brewer's back, prompting the horse to give a gentle snort of complaint, and crossed the distance to the woman in a few long strides. He laughed, an open, honest sound Segundus had never heard from him, and swept her into his arms. For a moment, Segundus's vision was entirely taken up with the embrace. He found himself in the uncomfortable position of discovering that his heart had been busy in quiet, hopeful daydreams without stopping to consult his mind on the matter, and that he was only now being made aware of its longings. He had, he realized, been hoping that... That what? That Childermas's visits to Staircross were for more than just business? He had been a fool to consider it. He had imagined the look he had seen in Childermas's eye that grief-stricken morning. That look he had thought hinted at something beyond the compassion of a friend, to something truly understanding. His mind snapped back into focus when Childermas let the woman go, stepping to her side but keeping an arm around her shoulders, and waved Segundus over. He dismounted from his horse with as much composure as he was able and walked forward. He offered the woman a bow and a smile and hoped that neither came across as too forced. "My colleague, Mr. Segundus," Childermas was saying. "I find he is tolerable good company for a gentleman." Segundus straightened and saw the twinkle of amusement in Childermas's eye directed at him. "Mr. Segundus, this is my sister, Mrs. Mary Sorsby." This information took a moment to filter through Segundus's already dazed senses, so he had to ask, "Your sister?" to make sure he had not misheard. "Aye, my sister." Childermas was nigh on laughing at him with his eyes. The laughter in his face became a teasing note in his voice as he said, "You did not think I had a wife hidden away in the country, did you, Mr. Segundus?" Feeling rather foolish, Segundus shot as dirty a look as he could muster at Childermas before turning to Mrs. Sorsby. "A pleasure to make your acquaintance, madam." He bowed once more, and when he straightened, he saw a warm smile upon her face. "The pleasure's all mine, Mr. Segundus." She had her brother's same rough Yorkshire accent, bred from the stones of the country itself, the same keen edge to her gaze. "I've been hearing about you for some time."
"Indeed?" he asked, turning to Childermas and raising an eyebrow at him inquisitively.
"Aye," Mrs. Sorsby answered. "From John here, as well as from others. You kept a madhouse at Staircross, did you not? Where that poor enchanted lady was kept."
"I did," said Segundus. "I'm surprised news of it reached here."
"Oh, news spreads quickly around these parts," she said, and it was strange to see such a familiar long smile on a different face, particularly if there's magic involved. Further discussion of the topic was avoided at the approach of a small roaring creature which appeared from over the rise, barreling straight for Childermas and scattering the grumbling chickens. Segundus was glad for the distraction, for the shifting of Mrs. Sorsby's penetrating gaze away from him.
"Uncle John!" the creature cried, and was swept up into Childermas's arms and settled on his hip with ease. "Where have you been?"
"All over, lad," laughed Childermas, and knocked the boy's cap down over his eyes. He dropped the child to the ground and spun him to face Segundus, a hand on each shoulder, as the boy straightened his cap.
"Mr. Segundus, my nephew Ned."
The boy peered seriously up at Segundus with a sharpness he recognized, and stuck his hand out. He could not have been more than 12 years old. Segundus reached forward and shook his hand firmly.
"Welcome, Mr. Segundus," the child said solemnly.
"Thank you, Master Sorsby," Segundus replied, and then straightened when the ceremony was done. It was not a ceremony carried through mockingly. Despite the boy's childish greeting of his uncle, Segundus could see the flint in him. The protective edge to the set of his mouth as he regarded this stranger made Segundus wonder what his reception would have been if he had come without the invitation of his uncle. He caught Childermas's eye, thought he caught a spark of approval there.
"Come in," Mrs. Sorsby ushered them. "You've been riding long enough, you must be parched."
Childermas directed Ned to hobble the horses and let them at the grass, while Mrs. Sorsby ushered Segundus inside. The dark interior of the cottage was blessedly cool after the heat of their journey, and Segundus was glad to follow Mrs. Sorsby's direction to a seat. She poured each of them a mug of small beer from a brown jug and refilled them a moment later when both men had drained their cups, glad to quench dry throats. As his eyes adjusted to the dim interior, Segundus looked around. Although small, the cottage was neat and well-kept, with homely touches in the embroidered cushions and tablecloths. There was some decorative pottery along the mantelpiece and a small collection of books on the windowsill. He searched for some evidence of a man's presence, a pair of boots, a pipe left on a table, a greatcoat hanging by the door, but could see nothing.
"I must say this is a treat, Mr. Segundus," said Mrs. Sorsby, as she placed a slice of Mrs. White's fruitcake in front of him. "We never met Mr. Norrell, and John was in his employ over 20 years.
"Oh, I am not Mr. Childermas's employer," Segundus exclaimed, looking over and catching Childermas's laughing eyes. "We are colleagues in this business," he said, and because that no longer seemed quite enough, quite adequate, he added more tentatively, "and, I hope, friends." As the conversation progressed, Mrs. Sorsby's manner relaxed, and Childermas laughed more often and more easily than Segundus had ever known. They discussed news and old friends, and although Segundus was an outsider to much of this conversation, he was still happy to watch them, to notice the similarities between brother and sister. The dark eyes, the long dark hair, more tidily fixed on Mrs. Sorsby and mostly hidden under a white cap. The long nose, more crooked on Childermas. The gestures that accompanied their words. Ned soon joined them, a child again sitting at his uncle's side. Childermas turned to Segundus and said, a smile creeping up his cheek, "Did you know, sir, that Ned is a magician?"
"I did not," Segundus answered, his own smile growing as he watched the boy's pride swell within his chest.
"But now that you say it, I do not know how he could not be with such an uncle." The conversation then turned to him quizzing Ned on his knowledge of magic, while Ned showed them some of the spells he had been learning. Mrs. Sorsby, it seemed, was something of a magician herself. At Ned's encouragement, she asked Segundus for his right hand. Segundus offered it, and she cradled his hand in her warm, rough palm while she studied his for some time. "I have heard of chiromancy before, of course, but have never experienced it firsthand, if you will," he said, finding the sudden, quiet concentration of the room rather oppressive. "Vinculus has offered, but I have my doubts in his training and abilities."
"He read mine once," Childermas said, watching carefully. "He wasn't too far off the mark. Other than telling me I had already been married 3 times, I'm sure I would remember such a thing happening even once, so that was rather a surprise." Segundus laughed at this, felt some of his own lingering unease settle. Even Mrs. Sorsby snorted a little as she swapped Segundus's right hand for his left.
"I'd be so shocked at such news of our John, I'd faint dead away, I reckon," she said, looking away from Segundus's palm briefly to grin at her brother.
"You've been at it long enough, Mary. What news do you have of our Mr. Segundus?" Childermas asked, leaning forward with his elbows on his knees. She smiled knowingly at him, and once more took Segundus's right hand, scanning it more quickly this time.
"You have great wisdom and integrity," she said, tapping the base of his middle finger. "You are intelligent, which, taken along with your resourcefulness and optimism, will do wonders for your business and legacy. You are not a natural leader," she said, raising his left hand, "but you are working to become one. You may not have much in the way of physical strength or bravado."
"And here I was, worried you were doing your gentlewoman's reading, Mary." Childermas laughed, and she scowled a little at him, but otherwise ignored the comment.
"But," she continued, "you persevere when things become difficult. You've not seen much romance," she drew her finger across his palm, "although the few attachments you have had have been and will be long-lasting and fulfilling. You will marry once."
As Segundus tried to fight his blush and bit his tongue on his objection that he very much doubted he would marry, she tapped his palm and drew two fingers down parallel to the heel of his hand.
"There's much outside influence on your life, but you're working with it and building a legacy of your own. Those influences and your own work on your fate intersect, but you are not at the whims of others."
For Segundus, who often felt more at the whims of others than a flag on a breeze, this was reassuring. Mrs. Sorsby dropped his hand and sat back in her own chair.
"That was fascinating, thank you, Mrs. Sorsby," he said once he had absorbed the reading. "You must explain to me how it works."
"We don't have time for that, Mr. Segundus, not today," Childermas laughed. "That'll have to wait for another visit." He turned to his sister to explain. "Mr. Segundus will not hear the simple version. I was hours explaining the cards to him."
"You've taught him the cards?" she asked, eyes cutting sharply to Segundus.
"Well, not precisely taught," Segundus said, "but we had the most interesting discussion of their meanings and the methods of a reading. I certainly could not interpret a spread myself, although it is a fascinating art." He smiled warmly at Childermas, recalling the camaraderie that had grown throughout that journey.
"If you cannot explain the method to me today, then perhaps you could tell me how you came to learn?"
"My mother taught me," she said slowly, with a glance to Childermas, whose expression had turned sober. "She taught us many trades as children, so we might adapt our income to the seasons."
She looked to Childermas again, something familiar in her sly expression. The palm reading was only half the job, though.
"Ned," Childermas called, just as Segundus opened his mouth to ask for details. He asked his nephew to demonstrate the spell he had been taught at his last visit, and they spent half an hour admiring the boy's enchantment of growing a tiny sapling from an apple seed.
He took his uncle's hand and pulled him to his feet, and the other adults followed them out to view the small orchard that he had started while practicing. Segundus exclaimed aloud his congratulations and his great admiration of the talents of both the pupil and the teacher. It was nearly 4 by the time the two men mounted their horses and started back on the road to Staircross, calling their goodbyes over their shoulders. Ned ran alongside Brewer until they reached the shade of the trees. The weather was still warm, but the worst of the heat had passed while they were in the cool little cottage. It was only once they had passed through the trees back onto the path that Childermas spoke.
"She was glad to meet you," said he, hanging back a little to ride beside Segundus. "She rarely meets new people. Although she did have her best manner on for a gentleman visitor."
Childermas laughed a little to himself at some private joke or reminiscence.
"It was a pleasure. She is a charming woman."
Segundus looked at Childermas from the corner of his eye and smiled a little. He was more relaxed than he had felt in a long time, the good humor of the afternoon having lulled him into a joking mood. "And far more handsome than her brother." Childermas gave a snort of laughter.
"It is not a difficult feat."
"I find you tolerable enough."
It felt a daring thing to say, but the easiness of the afternoon's conversation had bolstered his courage. It felt even more daring to keep Childermas's gaze after he had said it, to watch curiosity and consideration follow each other over his countenance. A smile played over Childermas's lips after a moment, and Segundus felt understanding flow through him like a current.
"I provide for her," said Childermas. Segundus was torn between disappointment and relief that his comment had not had a direct reply, but thought it was likely for the best.
She called herself a widow, which is true in the most part, but really she was ill-treated.
"You do not have to tell me," Segunda said, but Childermas silenced him with a look. It was not a stern look, but one that simply asked to be heard out.
"Norrell never knew of it. No one did," he continued, as if Segundus had not spoken, keeping his eyes on the road ahead. "He was a sailor, and not long after he jilted her, his ship went down off Cornwall, and some months later Ned was born. I cannot say I was sorry for it. She wrote to me, and I settled her with the house and a new name. I had some savings, and she wished to be away from the town."
He was silent for a few more minutes, and Segundus was at a loss for what to say. He was not used to hearing such personal family history, especially not of such a nature. For some time, the only sounds between them were the horses' breaths and hooves.
"The reason I tell you this is because I fear she gets lonely. I'm not able to visit as often as I like. It was all very well when Norrell stayed within the walls of Hertview, and I did not often travel further than Lincoln, or when I returned often to Hertview to see to the estate's business, but now I fear I am becoming neglectful. I did not keep her secret because I was ashamed. I must be clear about that." He fixed Segundus with a firm look, one that dared him to accuse him of any such embarrassment. "Only I wanted her to stay far away from the attention of certain gentlemen who would have been glad to use her against me."
Segundus thought he might have a good idea of who those certain gentlemen were and wrinkled his nose. Childermas then took a deep breath and turned to Segundus.
"Now, I don't want you to feel under any obligation, but I hoped you might visit her every now and then when I'm away. Ned is in need of guidance in regards to magic. His mother is in need of company. There is no man I would trust more in both of these endeavors than yourself."
Segundus was struck dumb at the request. To be so trusted, so esteemed, meant a great deal, particularly coming from someone such as Childermas.
"I would be honored," he answered, meeting Childermas's gaze. And truly, he had enjoyed her company.
"Thank you, Mr. Segundus."
It was the most sincere he had ever heard Childermas, and it made pride thrill down his spine.
"I think we are beyond that, Mr. Childermas," he smiled.
"I beg you, call me John."
Dark eyes crinkled in a smile, a toothy grin the likes of which Segundus had never seen on Childermas, but which transformed his face utterly.
"As you wish, John, and I hope you will allow yourself to do likewise."
They continued in a silence that was at once comfortable and heavy. It felt to Segundus like having eaten a large but delicious meal, until they parted ways on the main road. Childermas had business to see to in Thirsk, some leftover detail regarding one of Mr. Norrell's tenant farmers that Mr. Robinson had asked his advice on, and Segundus had neglected Staircross for long enough.
"I will likely be on the road early tomorrow," Childermas said, as they paused to say their goodbyes. "I do not know how long I will be away. I have much to see to."
"There will always be room for you at Staircross," Segundus reassured. He had kept Childermas's room as he liked it these last 4 months, and had no intention of changing that. He said as much to Childermas, who laughed.
"If you have any correspondence for London or York, I will be happy to take it for you. I will be back tonight, likely in time for dinner. You can hand me any charges then. I would not like to wake you as early as I mean to set off in the morning."
Segundus promised he would spend the rest of the evening thinking of any business Childermas could help with, while silently hoping there would not be much. He knew how much Childermas had to do already, how packed tight his time would be.
"Goodbye, John," Childermas said, turning Brewer toward the road to Thirsk.
The smile that bloomed on Segundus's face took him by surprise, accompanied by a similarly unexpected warmth in his stomach.
"Goodbye, John," he answered, and was glad of the returning smile on Childermas's face.
"If you're not back in time, I will ask Mrs. White to save you some dinner." Childermas thanked him, and with a last touch of his hat, was off down his separate road. Segundus carried on towards Staircross in a confusion of spirits. It was only after a few miles that he realized what Childermas had given him, the value and the meaning of it. He felt the swell of it in his breast, but kept it locked tight.